I said, what you know about it?
It's the stool, baby.
Got the mise en place.
Young stool, baby.
And the room a lot.
Hello, hello. You're listening to The Stew. My name is Jason Stewart. This is my food podcast, and we have my brother, Chris, here.
Hello.
And Andre Canaparo as well.
Hello, and welcome back, Chris. We missed you.
Oh, yeah. Back. 2 weeks off.
And we have our guest. We're in the back room of the Little Jewel of New Orleans, and we're talking with Marcus from that very place.
Hello, hello.
Say hello. Oh, hello, hello. This is, we'll do a quick intro for you, and then we can get into the Seinfeld baseline. But basically, you guys are a restaurant focusing on New Orleans-style food, and you're also a grocery store, and you're making sausages, selling po'boys, all kinds of crazy regional food and drinks and snacks from that region, and fully blowing up in L.A.
Yeah, so far reception has been... everything we wanted it to be and more. So
if you have not had a sandwich from this place, I mean, I feel like it's the first po' boy I've ever eaten when I ate the oyster po' boy here.
Forget everything
time.
You knew about po' boys. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, there was not really a lot of po' boy action in L.A. before.
One of the reasons we came here.
Smart thinking.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of bad
Chinatown.
Ones. There's a lot of bad po' boys.
Not just L.A. It's a difficult thing to pull off, I would say, almost anywhere.
It's an easy, it's a simple sandwich that's tough to pull off, I guess.
A lot of that, at least in my mind, probably has to do with sourcing, I would say.
Yep. Oh, that's what I was going to imagine
first
happening.
And foremost. Mainly a bread source?
I would say bread. I would say secondarily probably mayonnaise choice, but that's just me.
Oh. I was going to say mayonnaise as a joke, but then no.
No.
Well, I'm a big mayonnaise fan.
Huge mayonnaise fan. Yeah. Talks about mayonnaise probably once a podcast.
And the variants of mayonnaise.
Okay, so
is
the mayonnaise that you use a secret?
Oh, no, not at all.
What do you use?
Blue Plate mayonnaise.
Blue Plate.
Okay. Blue Plate is a favorite in the city of New Orleans and the surrounding areas. You hear a lot of people also, I think secondarily, a lot of people would like Duke's.
Duke's
would be another one.
Do you have Blue Plate here?
I have Blue Plate in the store, that's correct.
Yeah. Fantastic.
So what is different about Blue Plate? Is it just what you grew up on, or mayonnaise is similar, but you can tell the difference if you're really a fan.
Well, short of making your own, which is, let's say, the best, because you have some control over what you're putting in it.
Yeah.
It is regional. The first off, for most people, their tastes are always going to what they grew up with is always going to dictate what they like. But for me, I think it's a little more when I show it to other people. I've lined up some of the, I would say, competitors to Blue Plate mayonnaise, and I've noticed that theirs always seem a little pink in color as compared to Blue Plate, which is a bright white. And with that, just, you know, from just a precursory glance at that, that would indicate to me that there's more vinegar in the other ones.
Absolutely.
And I think the egg content seems a little higher. I can't quantify any of this because obviously I'm not in any of the factories. But,
sure.
But one thing I do know is that when I was a kid, we used to go to a place called Rocky and Carla's, which is a fantastic, crazy Sicilian restaurant in St. Bernard Parish, just on the other side of the Lower Ninth Ward from New Orleans. It's kind of like you go through the Lower Ninth Ward and then you hit Araby and then heading to Chalmette. It's out there. Anyway, this place is famous place, and it's full of crazy Italian people in there making enormous po' boy sandwiches. And what they used to do was they would take the mayonnaise jar, the large industrial size, turn it upside down, kind of squeeze the sides and pull it out, and Blue Plate mayonnaise would stand.
What?
So that they
like
could
a Jello mold.
Like a Jello mold without, exactly.
Really?
Cranberry on Thanksgiving.
They would then take the spatula and just skim off the top as they went without it falling over.
And it would
I remember that image as a kid, seeing that.
On the cutting board?
No, just like sitting in a small pan, like a half 600 or something like that. Sitting right there, this huge big mountain of mayonnaise that they would just take a spatula, skim off the top to.
So like a giant wheel of Parmesan that you're shaving off.
A pile of Blue Plate.
Defying mayonnaise. The laws of nature, this mayonnaise will stand.
So what makes it do that? Is it super whipped or something? Is there a bunch of air in it that keeps it
in my mind? It's just high egg content.
Yes.
Probably what you're saying.
High egg content.
You know, I don't like to suck all the mystery out of everything in life. Sometimes I just say that's a superior product and we'll let it go. But I don't want to demystify
this. But when you're dealing with mayonnaise, you kind of know that all bets are off to begin with. It's not like, oh my God, this is an, you know, it's like, you know, it's just bad for you and you're eating it because it's delicious. So,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So you're kind of like,
It's like the people, it's in the same context, the people that don't like mayonnaise, I don't even bother talking to them about it.
Because
it's like,
get it.
No.
No, they don't get it. And it's like discussing pornography or something. They're grossed out by it. They don't want to know about it.
Yeah. I mean, and they're, it's so very true. There are, you know, for every person that doesn't like, that is repulsed by cilantro, like they say there's like a...
Don't get me started on oysters.
The soapy taste?
The people that don't like oysters.
Ooh, well, I guess as a man whose crown jewel could be an oyster po' boy.
Correct.
An oyster denier is the bane of your existence.
I think one of the comments that we got once from a person who tried an oyster po' boy and was disappointed was that it was mushy, and it smelled and tasted like the sea. So there you have it.
God.
So there you have it.
Does lobster taste too much like lobster?
Well, there are a lot of people who don't like oysters, man.
It's not that surprising. Really.
Okra.
Another
one.
Trip. Love okra.
If you notice, all of these things have that slime quotient, and you either like slime. To me, the slime is the funk of soul and southern food.
It's the voodoo.
So if you don't like that.
The backbone of the South is slime.
Yeah, then get out of here, you Yankees.
Well, I love both, so I'm staying.
Well, don't get me wrong. There's even in the South, even in New Orleans, I know my own mother. She's not a fan of okra, but
yeah, definitely not for everyone.
Yeah,
but I
it's
love.
It's not
all
surprising,
of that.
You know. It's a funky thing, you know.
There you go. I'm detecting some okra fear.
No, I fuck everything. No. But I get it. I had in my youth, I was the pickiest little turd, you know. I wouldn't eat beans or anything, so I have that in there, like where textures.
This is a nation of people eating hot dogs.
Would bug me out.
Yeah.
Nation of people, it's food disguises that people enjoy.
Yeah.
People eat anything if it's disguised in something that's innocuous.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nation of people whose only meal is macaroni and cheese until they turn 5. Like, that's the only thing that they'll eat, and they'll have a tantrum if you don't.
Yeah, it's TV dinner era, too.
So. Chicken nugs.
It always surprises me. Sometimes you'll get we'll get a ticket in the back, and it'll be the plane this, nothing on this, and your assumption is that it's for a child, but you'd be surprised.
Yeah, no, right? Yeah.
You'd be surprised. There's a lot of people in there that I don't know how they're subsisting on like two. One guy came in and he ordered a fried shrimp sandwich with bread only.
Bread. So just bread and fried shrimp, and that's it.
For real?
Not, wow. I understand it if they're taking it. Like, some people get it because they want to take it to go, so they'll get the dressing and everything on the side.
Yeah.
They toast it out when they get home. That's a way of to sort
that
of resuscitate a fried food
that you're
not eating immediately.
Sure.
But this guy sits and woofs it down, so I don't know.
Wow.
Like, to me, that's like the 17 saltines. But
yeah,
you should send that out with like 3 crayons and like a small toy car every time somebody orders that.
That kind of seems like like it's a testament to how much he loves your restaurant. Is like he loves this. He hates mayonnaise and shredded lettuce so much that he's
shredded cabbage. Yeah,
and
that's another point. A lot of people insist on lettuce, and that isn't as surprising to me because the majority of places in New Orleans use lettuce too.
Oh, okay,
there's a few that don't, and I learned from them. And also in coming out here, I saw the logic of it in another cuisine, and it's sort of, I'd say, solidified my opinion on that. I would mean, in particular, Mexican food, if you look at the fried fish taco. They put cabbage, right?
Always.
So that's two different cultures that are doing this, or some people in those cultures are doing it. And it seems just so scientifically obvious that if you have something hot and you put it on lettuce, what's going to happen to it?
It's going to wilt.
Wilt.
Exactly.
It's structurally sound.
Right. So if I throw something hot on cabbage, it becomes more like lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's wilting that cabbage.
Yep.
And also because we're in a town like L.A. where such a large portion of our orders are delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Or pickup because of the car culture in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
That means you're going to have more time with
We're all on the go.
And they're not going to eat it as quickly as one might say in other towns where they just woof it up right there, like back where I'm from.
Yeah, lettuce in a sandwich has a very quick, short lifespan.
You don't want to see roast beef in a roast beef with gravy on lettuce eating 45 minutes later delivered by, you know, an Uber. Yeah. I can't imagine what that would look like.
It looks like a kicked in hog carcass.
I would have people complaining, and like that's just not sound.
Yeah. What
for them or for me, really, as a businessman.
As a po' boy maker, what do you think makes a po' boy exactly? Like, for somebody who's listening who's maybe heard of it, they've seen it, but like, what are your standards of a po'? Like, what does it have to be a po' boy and not just a sandwich?
Well, that's actually a much more complicated question to me, because I'm also informed by the history of the po' boy or of the peacemaker before that.
Oh.
And are you familiar with that?
No.
Okay, so basically...
Preach, girl.
Basically, what I would say rumor or myth has it. Originally in the French Quarter, in such times that French were in the French Quarter, absinthe was also in the French Quarter. And reportedly what would happen was guys would go out on these binges where they would be drinking this stuff and blacking out, hallucinating, and coming home several days later.
My Tuesdays.
We've all been there. I'm sure if, you know, we know anyone or have been anyone that has done something like that, the significant other is not always completely pleased about that. So what this
And that's just with vodka, let alone absinthe.
Right, let alone absinthe. So in this little chauvinistic story that I'm telling you here, the peacemaker was supposedly the sandwich that was going to get you back in the door. That you would buy on the way home wrapped up. And what it reportedly was the French... At that time, using a French baguette was probably on the hard side. Softened with butter, fried oysters. That's probably it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Still a little sounds
salt.
Good. Still
if you have good. That, maybe some pickles. I don't know.
Just but like the guy who comes and gets the fried shrimp sandwich. Maybe he's a purist.
Well, if he put butter to soften the
that would
gotcha,
work.
Gotcha.
Some pickles. I've had that before. A lot of people do eat their po' boys with butter. I get it. Drenched butter on bread. It's awesome.
It's great. No greater thing.
It's a good thing. Anyone that wants that, I'll make it in a second. I'm happy to make it. It's sound.
Awesome.
What happened then, so that's your peacemaker, right?
Yep.
What happened then was over time, you have another story about apparently why they call it a po' boy is because there had been some workmen that were working on either the roads or the train. I don't recall specifically, but essentially they were working. They didn't have any money, and a local guy that had a deli or a shop said, "Go out and give those po' boys some sandwiches." And what it was a gravy sandwich, basically the French bread loaves with the debris gravy from roast beef or something like that. Mm-hmm. Just gravy. I've heard a million things. Yeah. This is all mythological. I don't think it's something that anyone can quantify. Right. Some people purport to. They argue about it back home.
Some secrets left undiscovered.
Yeah. But what I do know for sure is New Orleans being a melting pot, not unlike New York City on some levels. You know, you have blacks, you have Latins, you have Italians, you have Irish, you have Germans. There's always a new ethnic class that's coming in doing something that the people that have moved up the social ladder aren't doing anymore. We see that in Los Angeles right now. So Germans started baking French bread. And I don't know what Germans know about French bread, but thankfully not much. Because if you have the bread that I get, which is from the Leidenheimer Bakery, or if you look at the... it's the Binder Bakery. My grandmother used to get Binder bread, another German name.
Yeah. Binder bread.
Mm-hmm. They were French bread in shape, but soft.
That makes sense.
Like the bread that I have here, like almost like a highly processed version of French bread.
Right.
And I've heard I grew up in that city. I've talked to tons of bakers. No one knows how to make that bread correctly. You can search all over and try to make it yourself. And the idea in my mind of making that bread probably has four constraints that are economically not feasible or not worth your time, or even something you could accomplish. One would be you would have to replicate the humidity and temperature of the bakery in 100%. Louisiana, which would be asinine here in California to do. It's one of the reasons I left that city is the humidity and temperature of that. Okay, so there's that. Secondly, we always hear with white breads, if you look at like New York City or if you look at San Francisco with sourdough, New York with the bagels or pizza, white doughs, water content, the alkalinity, you know.
Sure.
So there's that. Yeah. So you have those two things right there. You have temperature, altitude. That's another thing.
Okay.
The altitude of the place.
We're
3 feet below. So all of this.
Yeah.
Baking, it's one of the reasons I'm not a baker. It is the most finicky. No apologies to all of my baker friends out there, but honestly, if they get one thing wrong, it's all wrong.
It's science.
And what I like about cooking is, messed up here, you can add a little of this, little of this.
Mm-hmm.
There's variables where you can, something too salty, you can bring it back up, whatever. With baking, if you blew it, you blew it. So so there's that. And then lastly, I think probably the most difficult thing to reproduce of that would be, I lived there my whole life, and I'm thinking, I'm from there, and I don't know anyone there that can make the bread.
Right, yeah.
So that tells me, if I know any, I'm part German on one side of my family, we always would go to their Christmas first because it was such a stoic and kind of quiet event before we went over to the Italian side where they were flying off
fish
the walls.
Everywhere.
Right. So I think that as a closer knit community, those recipes probably aren't readily available.
Wow.
That's just my opinion.
Sure.
But so bread.
Where do you get your bread? So how does your bread come to you every day?
That would be an amazing answer if I could give you that.
Right.
It would be an unbelievable answer, but there's still got to be trade secrets somewhere along.
I like it. I like it.
There's got to be some trade secrets.
So this amazing bread. So you said the bakery that it comes from.
In this particular case, that would be the Leidenheimer Bakery. Which
Leidenheimer.
They do a variety of bread. I mean, po' boys. The breads we get, the pistolettes are 10 inches typically. That's even a variable. Sometimes they're 9.
That's a great name for a loaf.
Yeah.
But they also would do the plantation loaf. I don't know how that would go out here.
Less of a popular name.
Yeah, less
for
of a
loaf.
Popular name. They would take
the slave bread off
the
me.
One.
The twin. I remember the twins. It would come in a plastic bag, and one was bigger than the other. That's sort of like the. I don't know if these were like the bloopers, and they just threw them in. But
yeah,
the twins.
Yeah, him and I are actually twins.
But to go back to your original question about what a po' boy is, and the reason why I'm starting on this long story about bread is, in my mind, it's the bread before anything. Because this bread, not to tout it so much, that I'm not trying to get anything free from the Leidenheimer Bakery just yet.
Oh, it's so good.
some comps.
Would it kill you to send a t-shirt?
Yeah.
you guys hosted the Winter Olympics. Come on, guys. It was a Leidenheimer joke. Go ahead.
But the I like that show. There's a new show, right?
The Lillehammer?
That detective? Oh, Lillehammer. It's Lillehammer.
Yeah.
No, but the thing about that bread is I have experimented with it, even with stuff that's not, you know, indicative or native to my culture, like making our version of tortas. And it's incredible.
Oh, sure.
That bread is unbelievable. I can put any protein on it and find a way to make that desirable. Mm-hmm. So to me, one of the things that makes a po' boy, or the paramount thing that makes a po' boy, is the bread, for sure.
Well, that's so great common denominator on your menu. If how many po' boys do you serve? And it's constantly changing the whole board itself.
What are we at right now, Inna?
Yeah. Well, there you go.
I would say 18 to 20, and then on a rotating list, probably another 12.
And it wasn't, I didn't see a lot of redundancy.
No.
So,
no,
like, it's the bread.
It's
right?
The bread.
Makes sense.
And what's cool about that is I will sub the mayo because sometimes we will make our own aiolis. I do a shallot aioli, I'll do a fina herb, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to lend my, I've done Asian ones when we had Chinese New Year.
Ooh.
We did a char siu where I did a sriracha mayo.
Why did I miss that?
Plum sauce.
That could be a.
And people loved it.
That'd be a great bun mi bread, too.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say.
Now, that's funny you should mention that, because one of the other things that's happening in New Orleans is amazing, and it's amazing for exactly the reason that I was talking about before, with the different ethnic classes and peoples of places moving in as a port city. But it's a small port city. It's not like L.A. So you can feel the people bumping up against each other.
It's immediate.
Mm-hmm. So the Vietnamese culture, which has been there for quite some time. We have a lot of Vietnamese in New Orleans East.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were one of the first people to rebuild like it was nothing.
Oh, yeah?
Wow. Some of my favorite. I've gone to Vietnamese restaurants all across the country, and my favorite two places are out here in L.A. and New Orleans, because they do interesting things there, too. And their community is really deep there. They have a few bakeries down there that have sprung up even in the time that I've been gone, that now people, if you go to the Po' Boy Festival, which is every November in New Orleans, strongly advise anybody that enjoys Po' Boy sandwiches to go to the Po' Boy Festival.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
I took Una before we started the restaurant so we could get a taste. I think, how many people were there? It was like 10... Close to 100,000 people.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of po' boys.
Yeah. Yeah, it's on Oak Street.
One day?
Uptown New Orleans. I think it's either 1 or 2 days.
Dang.
We went in early. They kind of make them smaller. They make them so you can taste many of them.
That makes sense.
But all the stars are there. And the Vietnamese are out there. Mm-hmm. Viets are banging out their banh mi on their bread. And there are some places that are New Orleans po' boy places that only use the Vietnamese bakery because they like their bread. So it's not
it's a great. Well, the banh mi is a great bread.
Yeah,
down here in Chinatown, where you're located, is where I feel like all the best banh mi sandwiches in L.A. are. I mean, outside of
Orange County.
Yeah, outside of Orange County.
I agree with that, but there are a few in San Gabriel Valley.
Right. Yeah. I mean, sure. Without traveling
to the valley, Chinatown for sure.
And the po' boy is very similar to the banh mi in terms of materials and price.
That crunch.
Depending on, you know.
Well, unfortunately, po' boys, even in New Orleans, have...
po' boys are not po' anymore.
No, not by any means. Anytime you're using that heavy amount of seafood, it's one of the things with us.
Makes sense.
A lot of times people will complain, obviously, because they're informed, again, by a food structure where they're getting $2 tacos or $1 hamburgers.
Yep.
They see a $14 or $15 sandwich, they freak out initially. First thing is, we jam these sandwiches. I would rather give someone a 10 inches of an overwhelmingly fat sandwich and then be like, yeah, it's a bit dear, it's a bit pricey, but you're going to get your money's worth. Then for me to do what I've seen here in L.A. before, give you a 5 or 6 inch little thing and charge you $8. That's no one's satisfied by that. That's underwhelming, and it's not representative of what.
You don't want to limp in. You want to give it the full. Yeah, I mean,
right.
Give them the whole 10 inches.
People may try to say otherwise, especially here in California, of a way to do it, but I apply this even to the vegetarian fare that we have here, and we do have quite a bit, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It should still be gluttonous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, the veggie crowd really misses out on that. I've had so many of that crowd come to me and go, thank God you make this sandwich, because they're used to getting, millet on a plate.
You go hungry a lot.
Some sort of very small, meager sustenance, whereas here they can come and actually have that same sort of American pig out food.
You need
experience.
To feel like a piece of shit every once
exactly.
in a while.
Exactly.
Even when you're a vegetarian.
You're going to die too. You're going to die
too. I don't get a salad when I'm hungover. No. Vegetarians drink too, man.
They do.
We did.
They, you know what? They have to.
Yeah.
They have to.
Did you ever have a vegetarian run?
I had a vegan run.
We certainly had a vegan. I was going to say.
A raw vegan.
All three of
ooh,
us.
That's a bummer.
Leaving New Orleans. Man. Well,
that'll do it too.
You know when that's a good time to become vegan? When you leave New Orleans.
Yeah.
Maybe recovering from like 15 to 20 years of good living.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Probably a good idea to do that purge.
Yeah.
It wasn't a bad idea for me. I enjoyed it.
I did it for 10 years. But my blue plate, because our associated properties, when we were growing up, when we were making our own sandwiches, we ate veganaise. So that's just like this.
You know, I don't mind veganaise.
We
put it on our French fry po' boy sandwiches. That's right, vegetarians. Veganaise.
Really?
French fry po' boy sandwiches, two types of cheeses, mushroom gravy, Leidenheimer bread. Ugh. In abundance.
Because it's pretty well seasoned.
Sounds so good.
How much does that cost?
What is that going? Una? How much is the vegetarian?
It's like eight bucks.
$8. Yeah. So Una is good. The mathematical brain of this equation.
Yeah.
All creative.
That's great.
Front of house right there. Handling it all.
And
you do.
It's a lot to handle.
Speaking of your creative brain, are you with this type of cuisine that kind of has the very old school style preparation of the southern cooking? Are you doing any modern techniques here?
Well,
you got the sous vide. What's going on?
I
you dehydrating some
none of that. No, pickles? I wouldn't say that. I would say I'm doing what's modern to me, or what's different to me is if I grew up basically learning how to cook from an Italian or Sicilian perspective,
mm-hmm.
and then relearning from Cajun, French, and Creole style cooking, which there's a variance there.
Sure.
And then coming out here and then eventually going through, loosely speaking, a classical French train program.
Yeah.
What I would say that I'm doing differently than what people are doing back home is it's just maybe a little more French, like French,
mm-hmm.
and a little more technique. And what I would mean by that is we're using pretty looking sausages because now I've had proper charcuterie classes.
Mm-hmm.
So we can make nice things. I'm using they don't really use, there's some places in New Orleans that bump it up and make it a little fancy,
mm-hmm.
but you know, we're using sauces, aiolis,
sure.
different type of dressings,
the room
grilled peppers, but even still, those are just accents. They're still based upon essentially country or poor folk food.
Yeah.
That's still at the core of what we're doing. So, like, for instance, one that I would be doing like that. When I was a kid, I remember there was a craze in the 1970s of mushroom Swiss hamburgers.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Sure.
With the
sure.
gravy. And then later, fast food places started doing mm-hmm. knockoff versions of that. It was sort of like the baked potato, the dressed baked potato in the 70s sure. was a huge thing. Well, anyway, I always loved this. And I always wanted to do a completely tricked out version of that. So here at the Little Jewel on the regular menu, I start off with some Fienerb aioli on the Leidenheimer bun, just light shredded cabbage, little green onion. Then we take what I call black onions, which is when I take white onions and burn them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yep. Then we salt them with, I like slap your mama.
Okay.
I give it quite a bit of the hottest one in the red can. On top of that, we make a cremini mushroom. We use organic cremini mushrooms, and I make a gravy out of that. And then we put that
nice
on top of two medium rare cook Wagyu beef patties with Gruyere cheese. Cut those so there's four pieces, line them up, cover it with gravy. I mean, it's ridiculous.
So that's what we're getting on the way out of
yeah,
here.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea.
Done recording.
It's become a favorite, everyone that's had it. And that is something that, of course, no one was doing that in New Orleans, at least when I was there. And
right.
That is the product of me being, you know, in a kitchen with fancier stuff.
Yeah, so
it's a great example.
At the heart, it's just like a funky, I mean, just patty melt. Salisbury steak in a weird way.
Sure,
like,
it's still. But at yeah. the end of the day, what are we talking about? It's still a mushroom cheeseburger.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Yeah. So yeah.
It still is. We're just using, and I think that's.
It's the technique, like this.
I think that's when, if you're taking it from something that already existed and you're bumping it up, you know, you're making it. It's at least informed by something that was good in the first place. Whereas what I see a lot of places when they do try to do things like po' boys, and maybe they're not as informed by the culture, they'll pick things that don't have any rhyme or reason to them,
mm-hmm.
and that are not informed by any cultural tradition. That's what I think of California a lot with cooking. No offense to
mm-hmm. Nadia, but, no, but, that's how we do it here, buddy.
Well, and
it's true, though.
And there are, and that's how you find a lot of happy accidents. But oftentimes, yeah, sure. you're talking about something that's just. A trendy ingredient. Like
arbitrary.
I remember when the foie gras ban got lifted, everyone was like, "Are you going to do po' boy?" I was like, "Absolutely not."
Yep.
And the reason why I'm not is because everybody and their grandmother is going to do it. Mm-hmm. Because now they get to finally stop, you know, experimenting with calf cheek or bacon or whatever the hell they were doing for the last 2 years before that. Yeah, Nothing against those things, but I think there's just so many nice traditions that are either forgotten or can be enriched.
Yeah.
So I'm not, you know, an incredible fusionist.
Not chasing the trends. No. Well, the real deal Holyfield here at Little Duel.
When you, so you got to take this idea from your childhood of like, hey, I really love this thing. I want to make it my own. And then you created this new thing completely, and you reached a point where you're happy with it. Have you done that with any other kind of childhood favorites, or like at a certain point in your cooking career where you're like, I really want to do my version of this, and then now I have a restaurant of my own and I have the means to put out whatever I want, like I've created this awesome thing that I love and it's what I make when I want to impress my friends. I'm drunk. This is like the grand slammer.
Any of those desserts fit into that category potentially?
Well, sure. I mean, you mean that we have out there, right?
Yeah.
Now?
The desserts are amazing.
Yeah, of course
too.
We have the standards, the bread puddings, the banana puddings. On desserts, I am a severe traditionalist, and that's because you can't find a lot of it out here. Mm-hmm. And because my focus isn't on desserts, I have to pick and choose the ones that, you know, I don't have a lot of them. We have like five or six at any given time. I can name five or six ones that we can make all the time. You know, two types of bread pudding, pecan pie, sweet potato pie, banana pudding. We're already there. I mean, that's
all you need. Mm-hmm.
Those are Southern staples when done right.
More than enough.
And there's not a lot of it. So, I mean, in terms of availability out here on the West Coast. So I'm not as creative with it as maybe I will be. But on that note, we are going to be having some fried pillowy donuts here soon, which is one of the dearest things to my heart.
Is it beignet?
Yes, sir.
Oh, dog.
Yeah, I worked at...
about time.
A lot of people... I was a waiter briefly at the Café du Monde many years ago.
Oh, you really?
At Du Monde.
And everyone is always impressed by that. Everyone is impressed by that, but quite honestly, to me, that is the tourist place.
I'm sure.
A lot of people are all mad at me here, but Morning Call is the local beignet spot.
Morning Call.
Some people there will even disagree with me, but I'm sorry, you're wrong.
Now, do you feel that cottonseed oil is an integral part of the beignet?
I don't even talk about beignets and how they're made. I don't even talk about them. Beignets are something. I will say one thing about beignets. Everyone should stop making them stuffed with everything until they can make one correctly, flat out. Number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, a beignet should be consumed within 2 to 3 minutes of it being out of the grease. There's not enough time to stuff it with anything.
Nope.
I know that people do savory stuff. The savory beignet or the filled beignet, the problem with the logic of that is the beignet, sure, it has a inside hollow center. That doesn't mean it has to be filled with anything.
Yeah.
It's perfectly fine with just a little powdered sugar. Tip in a coffee cup.
God damn.
Chicory coffee.
Or there's a thing that we used to do at Morning Call called slits. And it's when you take a circular, like a pizza cutter, and you cut shark-like gill vents in the sides and, you know, the surface of it.
Okay.
Up and down. And what happens is that makes sticks that you can break off. See what I'm saying?
Sure.
They wiggle out and they make these sort of curved sticks that you can then dip in the coffee.
Easy dippers.
Sort of like the egg and soldiers thing, but with coffee and fried beignet dough that gets super crispy and
more surface area to hit
the
more
grease. Frying surface area.
So
and that would bring up to finish on beignets there, because I'm about to do it and I'm not even going to say a thing about them until we do them.
Cool.
One of the things that I've always liked about them is they really are a bang for buck equation. They're not that expensive to make. They fill you up. They're social. Everyone's happy to see them. Mm-hmm. I'll be glad to when we have them here in Chinatown, because also Asians... Chinese, the Vietnamese did too. They have a donut that's kind of similar, so I'm interested in seeing how they vibe off of our
Yeah. Are you guys already open for breakfast?
Not yet. That's the next step.
So you're gonna when you rolled out the beignets, you're gonna be doing.
We're gonna do some breakfast. I'd say a limited breakfast line and probably some, of course, some southern staples that people would be expecting.
Yeah. What would
some griots, that kind of stuff?
I mean, you could just do coffee and beignets straight up, and you'd
be straight
good.
One of my favorite things is poached boudin.
Mm-hmm.
That you lightly grill after, and then you either poach some eggs or fry some eggs and put them on top, and you cut that yolk into it.
Hmm.
Fresh made boudin. Boudin being a rice sausage.
Yes.
We do boudin blanc here. Boudin noir is not exactly legal in California, so that won't be happening.
Because of the blood?
Is that a blood rice?
It is, and it's because of the freshness of it, the temperature of it. I think there's... I'm not even specifically sure why it's not allowed, but... it isn't. I know that much.
Yep.
On your, like, you guys are as much of a grocery store market as a restaurant. What do you think the percentage of sales you guys have is just off of selling groceries?
Well,
compared to your restaurant food sales,
it changes by the day. On the weekends, people shop more.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons I have this format. Grocery deli. And indeed, one of the reasons I did this restaurant, I mean, it's clearly a grandiose concept for me to try to pull this off. And it has its reasonings, I would say. I think part of it was when I went back to my hometown after this storm. I mean, every New Orleanian says this. This is almost cliched at this point. I don't want to... drag you through
for a reason.
Katrina memories, but one of the things why I decided to do this, or why it started working in my mind, was when I went home on several occasions, and as I saw the city change with new residents, and of course they should be new residents, you need fresh eyes after something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed a lot of the things that I grew up with and took for granted were disappearing. The corner store, specifically the ethnic corner store, which was either the Irish or the Italians or the little restaurants like Uglasich's or all these other places, they were closing down. And it was because the kids were moving out, people were bailing. The people that were moving in weren't the same people. They'll have their own histories. But mine was starting to dissipate. And this is something that I know enough about that I could do. And I was one of these people in L.A., like so many New Orleanian or Southern transplants that sat and complained all the time about all this whack, you know, Southern food that people were trying to make. And it's difficult. Again, like if you're not informed by it, it's tough to get this stuff. We have to go through so many hurdles just to get these small town companies to even ship stuff out to us because they're like, why you want to do that? You're calling someone out in the middle of like St. Marksville trying to get a box of stuff. It can take weeks at a time. And it's not like... so much of our modern culture where you can just call up like Cisco or Costco and get this stuff. I have to call the actual places and find a way to get them out here. So there's a lot of reasons why it's difficult to do this. So I don't fault places for not getting it right.
Sure.
But in my mind, learning cooking from my grandmother, who passed away 2003, a couple years before the storm, I always heard her voice saying to me, well, you know how to do it. You do it.
Yeah.
So it became a thing that to go to this ridiculous detail of making it look like the markets that I grew up in were around was in a way, I mean, obviously something that helped heal that aspect of my life.
You're taking that flag and planting it here and now, or maybe a tree is a better reference.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel... like, obviously, there's going to be people that are going to be like, you know, what the hell are you? There's always going to be certain elements of people that are going to see any type of new culture as a cultural incursion of another culture. We hear here in Los Angeles, you know, obviously, we've heard some gentrification comments when we came in being the only, you know, pale faces and
right.
Well, at least me.
Yeah.
not Una. In fact, Una's Korean. And when we first came into this neighborhood, some of the local businesses weren't, I would say, incredibly friendly. They were curious, I would say. And maybe you got a little stink eye. But as more people found out what we were doing, this would be actual Chinese people that are in this area.
Yes.
They were fine and relieved that we were not yet another Chinese restaurant. So that's a perspective that...
They're like, fuck, finally somewhere I can get a sandwich for lunch.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's so hilarious often when I'll talk to people who are, for lack of a better word, more westernized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And their assumption is that the people that you're around want everything to be like them, too. I mean...
Yeah, that's crazy.
Is that saying that Chinese people don't appreciate variation just as much as, you know, some white people? But yet white people will say, oh, yeah, they're going to gentrify Chinatown. It's going to be all screwed up. And it's like, well, it's kind of like the same deal with I don't think there's going to be any shortage of taquerias in Los Angeles either.
In Boyle Heights? No.
Right. I mean, you might get a couple of streets where things are trendy for a minute, but there's still I would find it hard to believe that Los Angeles would suffer the same fate as, let's say, San Francisco or New York, simply because we are an industrial corridor from downtown to Long Beach.
Yeah, completely.
It's an enormous, it's like the biggest goddamn city I've ever lived in.
Mm-hmm.
You fly into this thing and you look at it and you think, if it was my task to be, okay, gentrify that. I mean, that, it's just, it's laughable to me.
Yes. So.
This city is undefinable. Really. Yeah.
It is undefinable. It's this monstrosity, you know, of anything, ethnic neighborhoods running up against other ethnic neighborhoods. And like, there'll be a hardcore and then like soft edges of, you know, cultural blending. Like you hear the stories about the Chinese bakers, I forget which one it is, but they make the quinceañera cake and they've been doing it for like, because there was Mexican bakery in that neighborhood. I mean, I never heard stories like that so much where I grew up. So LA is very interesting in that sense. And the idea in my mind of why we were able to set up here the way we did would be, if we're good, we'll make it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep, absolutely.
If we're good, we'll make it. It'll be apparent to everyone. If we're not good, you know, if we're just some... yet another antiseptic Los Angeles over architectured, you know, bland food place with a name like, you know, Spring and Ord or something like that. Maybe you know, don't even get me started on that. Sorry, well, everyone. With
you got me to eat here three times in a week when I first tried it. So
Going back to saying that you wanted to make this place look how your childhood memories of a corner store looked. How good does it feel when you finally build this and then all the transplants from New Orleans who are here now walk in and are like, oh my God, everything
they thank me every day.
Yeah, I mean, it must, I mean,
people walk up to me
every
and shake
single
my
day
hand.
You must have, have that experience.
It's unbelievable. That's something that, I'll be quite honest, I probably did this for much more selfish reasons, much more to remind me of it on a daily basis, because like, I'm calling my mother up and other people back home to send me all this stuff. So now I have trade routes to my place. I can get all this stuff whenever I want, which is fantastic. That's like a New Orleanian's dream to have, or anyone that's from anywhere, right? If you can have access to your stuff or you know, coming out to you, it feels great. That's a great thing. So those were probably primary in my mind, but it didn't hit me until, I guess, about maybe 2 or 3 months in, when we started getting people who were like coming up and like looking at me, like shaking my hand and saying thank you. And they drove in from like Simi Valley or something like that.
Really?
They're like from Gretna or Marrero or somewhere in New Orleans back where I'm from. Yeah. And it's, and that, I mean, that's the best compliment. It's one thing to be a chef or a cook, right? Let's say I'm a chef and I'm going to dazzle you with my culinary artistry or my plating or whatever. And not to demean any of that, because I have respect for the people that do that. I am more a country and slow food purveyor, so we're not architectural in the slightest. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate it, and I enjoy it on a regular basis. But for me, what scratches my itch is if I can take a way of introducing time and place to someone that is either A, experienced it, B, never experienced, C, grew up with it, and all of those people, the full spectrum of it, love it.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that to me is better than I would say just the egotistical stroke of you be admiring, you know, my finesse with or my knife skills or whatever, or any of the things I mentioned before. Not to take away any of that. I'm just saying for me personally, translating, because think about it, food, at least in my mind, food is another way of communication. It's communication, again, of memory, of time, of place, of culture. So if I'm doing that effectively, then that is, I would say, something that is not only selfless in that you're giving to another person, but that you're also being able to teach those people what it was you learned too.
Yeah.
And there's nothing better than that for me as a chef.
That's what it felt like when I walked in. It's like I recognize none of the details because I have no reference, but then I also have complete reference of how I feel when I walk into this. Like, it's just, this could be anywhere at the same time. It's just like this perfect bodega deli vibe that everybody has, like, their equivalent of this in their hometown. Like, that's what I have in my mind.
There is an ethnic version or a local version of, this just happens to be mine.
You could be slanging pizzas. This could be, you know,
That's why with the sodas, we, one of the things that we are different than, let's say, a local New Orleans joint is that, like, all of our coolers are stocked with all these crazy
kombuchas
and stuff and regional stuff and kombuchas and whatever. That's because whatever it is that people, I know what my touchstones to my nostalgia and my historic past are, but I don't necessarily know what everyone's are. So if they have one and they're like, oh, have you ever had the Rock and Rye Faygo soda we used to drink, that, then I want to get that for those people to have. While I'll enjoy yours while you enjoy mine, kind of thing.
That's
chips,
good.
Everything. It's so poetic.
If you have your specific type of New Orleans food and snacks and all that stuff, and then to have every kind
eating
of
Pockies while drinking a kombucha while having a
and that's one thing that you can, you know, you just get a big ass refrigerator and there's room for all the regional specialty sodas in America.
Sure.
And beyond, to just slide in
fucking
there. And then
Gatorade.
You're like,
I mean,
because when you walk into this place, and even a Gatorade, but when you walk into this place, you feel like when you go to like those old-time nostalgia candy shops, they're like, oh my God, they have all the rock candy, like all the stuff that you were used to. And then when you have that one soda, that's all
sure,
you need.
Sure, because some, for instance, we didn't drink cheer wine in New Orleans. We drank Delaware Punch and Pop Rouge and all this kind of stuff. But I've had stuff from other smaller, you know, my grandmother, she worked at a brewery. She worked at Jack's Brewery, which New Orleans probably in the 30s and 40s had about 5 or 6 breweries, Jack's being one of them. And every town in America had that. And every town in America had their regional little snacks.
Of course.
And had their regional sodas. And for me, that's the kind of fusion I'm interested in. I'm interested in the fusion of nostalgia. That's interesting 100%. To me because we already know those things have a storied past and a tradition. So if I can get a Houston kolache, I'm thinking of even making kolaches. I don't know.
Oh, kolaches are so good.
I don't know what a kolache is.
It's a sausage in a donut, basically.
Yeah, it's like a breakfast thing.
Yeah. Sausage in a donut, rather.
Okay.
Russian.
Yeah, and there's all these things that are in different parts of the country where people have their own like Little Debbie type snacks.
Yeah, right. Tasty cake, what have you.
I admit to many people listening, this sounds like, oh, we're talking about, you know, the fusion of America's crap food. And they would be correct. They would be correct about that because those are I know we do stand out with a lot of Los Angeles restaurants because people will come in here that are interested in lots of food. And I've even had people say stuff like, well, where is this sourced from? Or where is this, like, thinking that they're going into yet another. I'm like, this is unbelievably processed. This is like the most processed thing you're ever going to have.
Yeah.
You're going to love it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's because that's how we are different than I'd say a lot of the things that are going on with food in LA. We are, I would say even gleefully, admittedly, we don't want you to eat this stuff every day.
Yeah, man.
Right.
Come in and see us a lot, but not too much.
That's true.
Well, LA's residents will work that out for you.
You'd be surprised, though. You would be surprised.
No, I mean, yeah, we all try to eat fairly healthy and cook healthy. And
we do, too.
The first, I mean, you could not eat this every day, but the first time we came here, we came here again 2 days after that, and then again 2 days after that.
It's comfort food,
and we had to pump the brakes.
Like, yeah, but I exercise and eat healthy so I can come here and get an oyster po' boy with French fries and gravy. Like,
I work hard reward, in the gym to be able to eat all this, all these cheesy curls.
Seriously. For a lot of people, it's just because of the newness of it. I think, you know, like they don't have access to it. But then again, I know when I lived there, I ate it all the time too. So I don't know if that's. There's just a little bit of an epidemic going on over there. But I tell you one thing. When I was there, no one was drinking kombuchas with the...
That's
right.
Maybe that's making it.
I'm sure they still are not drinking a ton of kombucha.
Eating the digestion of those sandwiches.
They could use a booch down there, huh?
Yeah, they could. Maybe that's my next idea. Take the California.
Some Bayou booch.
If there's one thing they don't want down there, it's that. I can
that. Yeah.
Bizarrely, my one good friend from New Orleans that lives here makes... fucking mean kombucha from scratch at the crib.
Sure. But if you notice, he's moved away from
me. Yes, he sure has. Oh, there's a lot of distance between him and there.
His grandmother in New Orleans did not teach him that kombucha skill.
They were, they had something, I don't know, like in the last 6 months where someone referenced something in a New York Times article about no one in New Orleans, you know, being hip to kale or something like that. You wouldn't even believe the press that got in the city of the pro kale people, the people that are bringing kale in the city are fucking it up, and like that's a real topic. You and your California kale are coming. Trust me, I know tons of people like that.
I'm sure.
Yeah, tons of people. I don't want to see any of that shit at all. Yeah. Don't even bring an inch of it. They're not appreciative of it.
Even if it's fried.
That's localism, right?
Well, protect the Fifth Ward, y'all.
You were saying that you don't eat this type of food every day. What restaurants around LA do you enjoy? Where are you eating at?
Where am I eating right now? Well, I've always enjoyed Korean food to a ridiculous extreme since I moved here. When I first moved to LA, it's funny. If you are a New Orleanian, one of the first things they say to you when they find out you're leaving is like, well, what are you going to eat? Like, it's that big of a... People actually think, like, how are you going to survive? You
know? Tucking a sausage in your pocket on the plane for the plane ride.
Any of them that have gone to Nebraska or something, not to pick on people from Nebraska, but an example.
Yeah. We always pick on Nebraska.
Like, oh, God, the food, you know. That's like one of the first things they say. Even after Katrina, after leaving that, they were like in Houston for a few weeks, and like, we got to get the hell out of here, you know, and that's just...
Houston.
Yeah, even Houston. I mean, and don't get me wrong, the ones that stayed have actually... brought better cuisine to the
I love
city.
That though.
For sure.
I love that pride in your hometown cuisine. And like we're the best and that's it. And I think that's awesome.
That's been the point of view forever. It's not been, you know, it's been poor, crime, no money, but god damn it, we got the best food. That's the attitude.
And if their food sucked, they
would be
wouldn't...
hard to argue with them in terms of regional cuisine.
Yeah. If their food was shitty, cuisine, no, they wouldn't be
they
so proud.
It. They don't have it because they don't have but for like a homebred local cuisine.
They are their own ethnic cuisine.
They are. That's right. Which is another. I'm glad you touched that. That's one of the other reasons why it's so hard to make this food if you're not informed by the culture of it.
Sourcing.
It would be like if I wanted to open up a Japanese restaurant just because I like the taste of sushi.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's not really the same thing.
No, you're not going to pull it off.
So again, to answer your question, we like Jebudo. Jebudo? Is that how you say that?
Jebudo.
Right. That is the live. Seafood barbecue.
What?
Oh. Live.
No. Western and like Beverly or thereabouts, really? Above a little north of Beverly.
Okay.
And like once you get to like the woods, like Rosewood or
Oakwood, Oh.
It's really? Right there in like this like little rundown strip mall. It looks like a total dump.
Jebudo?
Jebudo.
Jebudo.
It's Jaebudo, I believe.
And so they do live seafood barbecue.
Yeah, it comes out, like you can get various sizes of trays and. Comes out, there's like abalone, there's oysters, there's clams, there's just
and they're all wiggling,
and you put them on the fire and they start wiggling even more and
damn,
they give you a white Michael Jackson glove, one glove that you hold because you're holding hot shells, so the shells are like popping on the grill, like, and then they have all, so it's like the barbecue, Korean barbecue equivalent, but all live seafood.
Damn,
I can't believe I've never had that.
Incredible.
Yeah. It's open until like 2 a.m. or something.
2 a.m. and it's the best Korean establishments. It's a drinking place. It's known for drinking too. Right. So people are just getting hammered.
Soju's going down.
Right, right. And it's nothing fancy. We like that. What's the other Korean place that we like a lot?
Sunnongdan, which is on 6th and like Alexandria or thereabouts, across the street from the Chapman Plaza.
Okay.
And it's also in a strip mall.
Okay.
And it's they do like Korean stews, like really traditional, like casseroles, stews, mm-hmm. like really hearty stuff. So you'll have, yeah, like oxtail, like braised oxtail, braised pork with like ripe kimchi stew. And
The bone and marrow reducing to stickiness at the bottom mm-hmm. that you eat. This is like just, I only see like, it's like mamas up in there yeah. that are running that.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
you go in there, it's open late, very spicy, at least the oxtail. 24 hours as well. Because for us, to eat at restaurants, we're here all day. So
yeah.
our dining excursions start no earlier than 9:30. So
yeah, yeah.
K-Town, the reason why it's probably Korean heavy and Thai heavy, at least in what we eat, is because those are the places that are open. Those places have a fantastic business model. I don't know what is wrong with the rest of the regions. I mean, I understand why we close, because we open early.
Mm-hmm.
And we're open all day.
Yeah,
LA's just the king of the six-hour restaurant. Like,
yeah,
I don't understand that at all. Like,
but that's why Koreatown also is so popular with chefs. I mean, you talk to a lot of chefs in Los Angeles. They're like, "I'm going to Koreatown
or San Gabriel Valley."
Because or San Gabriel. Well, for food wise, San Gabriel Valley, but hour wise, it's like not only is the food fantastic in Koreatown, but like you said, like okay, I just finished up service.
Well, it's competition?
12:30 at night. It's 1 a.m. Like,
well, you got to think about it. It's the largest amount of Korean folk, I guess, what, in the United States, in the country.
In the country and outside of
Korea. So they're not going to tolerate crappy food, which is wonderful. I mean, if it's not good, the place closes up.
Yeah.
I love that about Korean places where if it's good, it's packed, and the place next door is not good, they're closing down. That's it.
Yeah.
yeah.
They're not going to stay around because they had a cute name like, you know, like 6th and, you know, or Alexandria.
Western and Olympic.
James Woods and...
yeah,
James Woods. Woods.
Yeah.
It's a little wordy.
That makes sense.
Okay. Korean.
Yeah, so, Korean is Korean.
We're huge. Everybody here on this couch, on this podcast, loves Korean.
We had a Korean food podcast.
It's also the best translation, I think, for people that... The two types of people in the world, right? With food, spicy and non-spicy. That's like a big thing.
Yep, definitely.
If you're not spicy, then I can't even relate in the slightest. I'm sorry. I know that sounds prejudicial, but I don't know what to tell you. I'm sure there's some fantastic porridge restaurants in Beverly Hills or something.
That's a lot of oatmeal.
The awesome part about Korean food and Koreatown in LA is we know a lot of Korean restaurants. We eat there all the time. She just named two places never heard of.
Yep, same.
And there's 100 other restaurants that are mind-blowing that you guys have never been to, and it's just just never ends.
And that's L.A. in general. I am amazed that I've lived here, 18 years now?
Really?
I've aggressively gone to find... Before I was working in this restaurant and decided to go back, I was to go back into cooking. I was in production, like so many other people here.
It's the biz, babe.
And I worked for a Vietnamese music video and live performance DVD maker, basically. She put on these live shows, casino shows, all around the world. When you go to Vietnamese restaurants and you see these singing women
mm-hmm.
on the television and these like really heavily well-lit productions. I work for a company that does about 85% of those. And...
Cut your teeth.
I spent a lot of time in Orange County with their amazing Vietnamese.
Little Saigon.
Yeah, Little Saigon and around there. And my boss knew I was into, and as she was herself, all the variances of food that are available here in L.A. And we went everywhere and certainly had access to go everywhere. And with the production, you're always trying to find a new place to eat, like, every day.
So, yeah.
So I just would plow through new restaurants or whatever. And it still amazes me that I'll talk to people all the time, and they'll be like, oh, have you been here? It's amazing. I'll go. And they're like, oh, yeah, that place has been there for 40 years.
Yeah.
And I've had no idea. It's not been on anyone's radar. Mm-hmm. No one that I even knew. You know, because
you have
this
to
city
live in
is,
Garden Grove to know that it exists,
or the one place that's out in Long Beach, or a place that's out in there's just it's mm-hmm. endless.
It is. Yeah, it really is.
The North Hollywood, the Valley, Ventura area. There's tons of just all these places out there that unless you're there, like what's the? I don't know if they're still open. I loved Al Amir. Lebanese.
Oh
no,
is he still mm-hmm. open? If he's not, it's a shame, because that is fantastic Lebanese cuisine. And again, the other thing about Los Angeles, why I don't think it's weird for me to be in this old dim sum restaurant, the best cuisine in Los Angeles that I find over and over isn't in those antiseptic places that I was making fun of before. It's, as we say over again and again, in a goddamn strip mall.
Always. Yeah. Yep. Always in it.
That is the, totally. The soul of L.A. dining. Is in. I know everyone says the trucks. Trucks are all right. In my mind, they're a little limited just simply because you can't have as much cooking equipment inside right. them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's cool. You
they're
can
literally
things,
limited.
But you're limited because mm-hmm. because of what you can produce there. But strip malls, perfect size, perfect rent. Mom
parking.
And pop can do it. Parking. Mm-hmm. It's something that's just not afforded in other places.
Signage.
And almost always much better than any of those places where they're paying mm-hmm. top dollar. Almost always. Like the little hole in the walls in the strip malls, in my mind, infinitely better than all the meals that I go to that are fluffed up and the food may look pretty and they mm-hmm. may, you know, it may be architecturally sound again and it may be, you yep. know, colorful. It may have edible flowers on it, but it's just not anything that I wake up like at 4 a.m. and go, God damn it, I'm going to drive 45 minutes to go to this
That's
place.
That's true.
Yeah. I need to eat a fucking nasturtium leaf right now.
If I don't get some geoduck in me soon, I'm going to.
Well, that's very true. And I you used to hear back in the day, like, oh, it's in a strip mall, but, you know, don't be fooled by that. It's actually really good. And now.
Now people don't bother to say
completely,
that.
Yeah, it's so commonplace that you're
legit.
Like, oh, it's on a strip
yeah.
mall in the corner. Yeah. Like, all right, cool.
Well, we grew up in Orange County. That's all there are.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that too.
What part of Orange County?
Huntington Beach.
Oh, okay.
Like, there is no other. Like, that's kind of it. The business,
yeah,
if not, then you're going to the mall,
or the mall,
the real mall. Otherwise, there ain't shit.
Being here this amount of time, I remember when I would coming from the south, not the same as being from the east coast, like where Una's from.
South Orange County.
Una's from New Jersey.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
I would remember when transplants from her end of the East Coast would come out, and it was always like exactly what you say. There would be the apology about the strip mall. Yeah, it's in this like, you know, cheesy strip mall or whatever, this kind of stuff. It's that all that type of thinking are still the prejudices of class mm-hmm. and place.
Yeah.
And
completely.
And they're like sort of implying that you need to have this, you know,
valet parking.
Yeah, and this auditorium to consume in or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This place where you're going to be entertained. And I have nothing against atmosphere, you know. But I think a perfect example of how it isn't working, or at least for me, or why what I hear from a lot of our customers who have come and looked at the, you know, quaintness of eating in a glorified convenience store, you know, is that it's not a comfortable place for one of the things that I like to do the most, which is for me to step from behind when I catch up a little bit and go out and, you know, shoot the shit with my guests.
Yeah.
To be able to talk to them. I can't think of a time where I've been to any of these restaurants in the 18 years I've been in LA where I've seen the chef come out, say hello, thank you for coming out. I mean, I know you hear stories about it. And it's like it's a big fucking deal. Well,
right.
If my line's clear and I got a couple of minutes, why wouldn't I go out and do it?
Yeah.
And that's because when you're building these, you know, the distance between the person that is preparing your food by, you know, layers of wait staff and maitre d's and all that,
sure.
You miss one of the best part about communal eating, which is community.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was a kid, all the places that I went to, I knew who was cooking my food.
Right.
I knew the families that owned that place. They would come out and you'd see them. They'd be like, oh, that's, you know, that's the
true.
Old man. And he'd walk around and he'd like say hello to the babies and throw them a free dessert or something
and
like
when
that.
When they would see you, they'd be like, oh, this guy really likes the blah, blah, blah
he's
with extra mayonnaise
and he's
going to know just how you like it.
Yeah.
And it feels
you
good.
You came up and talked to Jason at one of our visits.
Yeah, one of the first times
around.
You came here, you just came up and
you introduced yourself
you know,
and
boom, boom, boom.
And that's what we thought.
But to me, that's
really nice.
I hear people talk about it all the time, like it's such an alien concept. And to me, that should be, again, you're serving someone some food. what it tells me if I say nothing to you is I'm like, I'm going to let the food do the talking. Okay, right. That's cool. That's great. You know, you have this thing that looks like the Arc de Triomphe on my plate with potatoes and, like, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Thai carved vegetables or all this. That's awesome. That's great. But if every place is like that, then that's not special.
No.
Mm-hmm. And we're fancying the shit out of every place in the city where everything I go into now is the industrial floor room, the... You know, the
reclaimed wood walls.
Reclaimed wood walls.
Edison bulbs.
Yeah, and it's just, and it's making every place, no matter how amazing the food is, forgettable.
Thank you.
Because there's no sense of place and there's no sense of community.
When every place is special, no place is special.
And here I haven't gone and declared war on the entire city.
Yeah.
Do all their work. Yeah, and you can talk to them about it when they come and eat at your restaurant every day.
Smooth business move. Smooth business move.
Hey, man, it's working. I think that's just dining, period. I think it goes beyond LA, too.
But it speaks to your passion, and it also speaks to how deep your roots are in what you're creating and bringing to this neighborhood. I mean, it is so it's so ingrained in your DNA, the love and the desire to share this with other people. That, I mean, that's the kind of passion that you hear in your voice, mm-hmm. you hear in your words, and you see in your restaurant.
Well, and when you're a like-minded person, you're the kind of person, like, I see this guy, he's doing exactly what he loves, I love it, and I'm going to always give him my business, and I'm going to give him my money, and then why wouldn't you want to come out and say, thank you for giving me all this money and letting me cook for you?
Well, I'll tell you what, they keep throwing money at us, we're just going to do more crazy stuff, because that's why we're in this business, is to...
As you should.
For me, I'm looking at it, and I'm scratching, you know, just a scratch of the surface of the... things that I was lucky enough to grow up with and were around that I would like to pass on to somebody, anybody that would appreciate it. So
we're going to have some nitrogen oysters in here very soon.
Yeah, guys. So we're going to see some liquid nitrogen here real soon.
Yeah.
Well, I've worked in a lot of restaurants and had a lot of chefs and even owners, and not everybody can talk like you. So there's also that. I have a lot of chefs that I've worked for who are great.
Good point.
That are ultra creative, maybe went to art school, God knows what,
and
they're
they work
so
it out
fucking
their,
introverted
sure.
yeah. that
you're absolutely
this,
right.
The concept of that is not an ego. It's just
oh, don't get true. Me don't get me wrong. Those are
not saying
again.
That,
I have infinite respect for those. Are the type of people that do like the. I one of the reasons that Una and I met was through a friend of mine at culinary school, and she was just. A demon with precision. She worked at Melis. And, she was amazing in terms of...
She worked at
Six Cicada,
Melis, like, super, like
Tweezer game. Very strong.
And you know what? That is... Yeah, exactly. Let's not make this not a compliment. I'm trying. OCD. No, but I'm saying that there is certainly... There's places for that, and I appreciate... As someone who has no patience for it whatsoever, it's mystifying to me as well. But at least from what we're doing, from a Southern perspective, this is just speaking as a Southern person.
Yeah.
And knowing that there is a certain degree of people that feel the same way that I do, don't class up our food, please.
Yeah.
Yep.
It doesn't do it any favors, and it's not going to do you any favors either.
Certain foods need to be kind of dirty, and that's where the flavor's at, man.
I mean, I would say that about any. I mean, we talk about that all the time. Like when we go to places where there is an interpretation of food, where they take something and they're like, "Hey, we're going to do this, but we're just going to use prime ingredients," which is fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the problem with it is the person that's probably doing that is either not from that culture or informed by that culture, and they didn't bother to get someone that was. So what you do is you take those good ingredients, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw them at the person to make it who grew up making it.
Yeah.
And that's something that we try to do here. I won't let too much stray from that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do anything that is ultimately fancy.
Well, you're doing
it should have
job.
It should have a flourish. There's nothing wrong with that, but it should still have its foot in what it is, which is, you know, the simple, slow cooking food of that region of the country.
Yeah, that's the backbone. Yeah.
Amen. Well, thank you so much for doing this. It's been a real treat. I feel like you could have your own food podcast.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's a daily show.
Fantastic.
Yeah, no baselines, though. We forgot about that. It just popped in the head.
Oh, yeah. That's
when I finish this up, I'll play us out with some Seinfeld bass music just for you.
Awesome.
Which is really just a keyboard, a synth. Yeah. Anyway, it's not a real bass.
So if you live in LA or in the area, come to this restaurant.
And by area, we mean within 400 square miles.
The Little Jewel of New Orleans. And where can people find it online if they want to check it out?
We're at littlejewel.la.
No HTTP.
Littlejewel.la.
Littlejewel.la.
Okay. Yeah. Highly recommended. And
207 Ord Street.
207 Ord Street.
That's right between Spring and New High, just up the hill from Philippe's.
Mm-hmm. And the hours?
We are now Sunday through Thursday. The deli is open from 10:30 to 9 o'clock,
okay.
With the last half an hour being takeout only.
Yep.
Then on Friday and Saturday, we stay open an extra hour, so we're open at 10, also last half an hour.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Takeout only.
That is all day. Great. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
If you like this show, you can go to thisstewpodcast.com for all the episodes and subscribe on iTunes if you want to be nice. And thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Come get a po' boy.
Oh, do it.
Move for that. Bye-bye.